GrowCFO is where finance leaders grow together. Join thousands of like-minded professionals using GrowCFO to access the combined knowledge and experience of the finance leader community. You can join us today at growcfo.net. Hello and welcome to the GrowCFO show. I'm your host, Kevin Appleby, and today I've got with me Darren Cran, who is CEO of Accounts IQ. Darren, welcome to the GrowCFO show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Darren, while I said you're CEO at Accounts IQ, you are an accountant by background. So how does an accountant like you get to become CEO of a company like Accounts IQ?
Yeah, I trained with KPMG quite a while ago now at this stage in financial services. And my role through a number of roles in industry, in banking, corporate finance, and I ended up as in industry, actually, as a CFO, a services business based in Ireland. And I guess I did a lot of work on systems over the years in that role. So connecting different systems together, a lot of consolidated reporting. And ultimately, I saw technology as a really important part of ultimately running an effective, efficient finance function. Through a number of events, I ended up meeting our founder, Tony Connolly, in 2012. And I joined the business, had launched its product about 4 years at that point. So when I came to the business, my first role was head of client services. So very much helping convince people to join our platform. It was quite in the early days of, I guess, there was a number of smaller products around, like Xero would have been one of the more better known cloud products, but we were trying to convince people to change to go cloud, actually, which was the thing at that time. We have very much a job of convincing clients to join Accounts IQ and then implementing and making sure that they were adopting the functionality of the product. I guess my role started out very much in the client services side for quite a good number of years back in 2012.
Right. And then move on to become CEO in due course.
Yeah, the business has grown significantly during that time. I mean, our original model was to, like, it's a system of record. So ultimately, there's a huge compliance part to any accounting system. Getting our product endorsed by accounting practices was an incredibly important milestone in the life of the company. So that really happened around 2013 when PwC endorsed the product by effectively using it as their platform for outsourced managed services, which they still use the platform for to this day. Other firms like Budio, Grant Thornton then followed suit. And so that's a big part of it. But I think for Accounts IQ as a business, where it's really sort of developed, the richness of the product has really developed out of getting a closeness to its customers. And that really came about around 2017 when we effectively set up our head commercial office in London in St. Pancras, which is still there to this day. And we basically took the product direct to the CFO and the finance function itself within the SME sector. So within that mid-market, very much getting close to the different personas in a finance function. So there's a team of people and they all have different jobs to do and they all have different outputs that they need from a finance system. So by getting really close to those personas, and we've got a whole series of things, I'd be thrilled to talk about how we do that. But over the years, we've really got to understand the unique pain points. And then it's up to us about building product that helps automate people's jobs, makes it more enjoyable to use, and ultimately gives them much better insights and the ability to collaborate around the business with in time. So not just the compliance part, of course, we have to do that, but it's actually adding a lot of enriched data, which then ultimately enriches many conversations around a business. So I believe we're helping make a business smarter because we're allowing a finance team to not just process the compliant element of transactions and do the basic reporting, but we're actually making them an information-rich center within the organization, which is something that mid-market hasn't traditionally been able to do that easily. It normally requires a bigger resource base within a finance team, which usually only comes at the enterprise level.
Indeed. Mm. So at the beginning of the conversation there, you mentioned the start and you mentioned Xero and QuickBooks. Now, you're not in that market space. So exactly where does Accounts IQ sit in the market?
Yeah. So people numbers is usually a thing that most people can relate to size of business by how many people are working in it, more so probably than revenue, because your revenue can be very different depending on what type of industry you're in. We typically take off where Xero's sort of sweet spot ends or QuickBooks sweet spot ends. If usually they would state that up to 19 staff, it's an unusual number, but call it 20. So anything from, I guess, 1 to 20 is where Xero and QuickBooks would see their sort of sweet spot. So when you get from 20 to 50, 50 is actually a bit of a turning point. You start to get more complexity within an organization. And with that, they tend to be looking to systemize. They're looking to become more efficient with how they're processing transactions. And there often is then enough stakeholders around the business that require more information in a more timely manner. And that typically requires a platform that's just that next level up to ultimately support the various different processes and stakeholders around the business. So I guess it takes a deeper product to actually provide something like that, a broader platform. And QuickBooks and Xero are really not looking to do that. They're looking to solve a sort of a more basic set of problems.
Yeah. And as a Xero user myself, I love the system.
Yeah.
It's great for doing the accounting essentials, like raising invoices, paying people,
yeah,
integrating with a bank and doing the bank rec and producing you a set of statutory accounts. But there are a lot of things that it doesn't do. And what do you typically see as the pains that people are experiencing when they're starting to look around for a new solution? You've mentioned that the need for that deeper reporting across the business. What other things are you tend to see as companies are moving towards that 50 people mark?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, ultimately, their reporting is a key output. So you mentioned most systems will do that basic piece, but a P&L, a profit and loss account, ultimately, if you were to share that information around the business, there's usually an extra set of dimensions that are inherent within what's going on in a business that aren't typically represented in a sort of a basic one or two level P&L account. So adding in multiple dimensions like business units, departments, products, that starts to bring the life of what's really going on in a business to life. So in Accounts IQ, we offer a range of additional dimensions to how information is both captured and reported. That's a key element of what people will look for. Also, consolidation is a key factor. So often a business, as it expands, will have more than one entity. And once you have more than one entity, you start to get into more complex transactions like consolidation, multi-currency consolidation, and intercompany transactions and intercompany loans. So that's another sort of typical classic thing of a growing business. Approval workflow in the world of Xero and QuickBooks, which is a great, they're both excellent products, by the way. They've got a lot of a marketplace with a lot of different app add-ons. So it means that what often happens is a finance team will have a series of different apps that they've tried to connect in various different ways. And what finance teams really sort of look for at a certain size is they want to have much more of that functionality built into one platform. So that means things like purchase orders and approval. They want really a system, one system that will actually have that built within it. Also, integrations often tend to become a little bit more complicated. So it's not just a simple app that they need integrated. They might have a particular piece of software that's in their business that they need because of the industry that they work in. And there might be a number, a bit of business logic that's required in that integration. So often they need a deeper integration. And we would see at least 80% of customers that join us would have a slightly more complicated integration requirement. And it could be one system or it could be many systems. So there are just a number of the types of things that people would certainly look for, including the scalability. So that's a platform that's got the ability to handle much larger volumes of transactions and have an element of customization capability. But at the same time, what's really important is ease of use. So one of the differentiators of Accounts IQ offers is the ability to be a system that actually users can find really easy to use and actually enjoy using, which is quite a key common feature of systems like Xero in particular. So we would see ourselves as a light ERP solution, very scalable, providing all of the functionality that really a business needs to scale, but at the same time, incredibly easy to adopt and use.
Okay, so light ERP, that's an interesting term. So
yeah,
we've talked about where your sweet spot starts and where Xero and QuickBooks ends. So going to the other end of the scale, Darren, how big can an organization go with a light ERP?
It's a great question. We're increasingly beginning to think that actually they can really stay on it forever, actually. And that's kind of part of, we made an acquisition of a business called Expensin for Christmas. last year. And our objective there was, we actually had our own expense solution, but what we realized was that we wanted to offer our customers a best-in-class expense management and spend management experience. So what we have is the ability to offer, as I mentioned to you, an incredibly scalable FMS at its core, with the ability to add on integrations where a business can effectively choose whatever system it wants. And then, as we happen to have another sister product in our suite, is the ability to then also use another product offered by the same place. So, I mean, ultimately, when businesses become, there isn't an exact number. We've got businesses that have thousands, early thousands of employees. I think when you get into resource planning, where there is a need by a particular part of the house of a business, if it's manufacturing, light manufacturing, assembly, when you get into that side of things, often they need to customize quite heavily the software that they're using. And that is what your typical ERP system actually is. It's enterprise resource planning. So I think that the word enterprise has probably got a little bit lost, in that the original ERP world was actually an awful lot to do with assembly resource planning for physical things, where there was lots of logistics involved and stock. Whereas actually the world of today is actually quite heavily service-based or e-commerce-based. So the need for having an ERP, a complex big ERP, where it's one system trying to do everything, is really becoming less and less.
Yeah, and I certainly think whenever anybody mentions ERP, I think back to my consulting background in PwC and others, and immediately I think about those product comparisons that we've done in the past that are between SAP and Oracle. And all of those SAP implementations, and of course, SAP came out of the chemical industry in Germany, heavy manufacturing, and geared up to do exactly what you say. So we're looking to say, really, if you're a service-based business, you probably don't need that heavy ERP. You need the light ERP. Now, if I think about that heavy ERP, and a lot of the things I did as a consultant were about business change, process change. Mm-hmm. And I always remember that if you wanted to run SAP, you customized it as little as possible. And therefore, you change your process to the SAP way of doing things.
Mm.
Is there the same need if you say taking on a light ERP, like Accounts IQ, to be customizing or changing things into a single way of working that suits the system?
It's a good question. I mean, I think the idea that even a workforce today with various different demographics and how people see technology as users these days, I think the idea that you can build processes around effectively older technology, I think it just doesn't really work as well anymore. I think, of course, there are certain systems that are strategic by their nature in terms of the decision to buy a system, a compliance system, a system of record, a CRM system. Like, it's not just a small group of users deciding that. But I think there is an awful lot more users involved down, if you like, at different levels that are deciding what technology that they want to use to solve the problems that they have in doing their jobs. So I think the days of the chief information officer being the original buyer, which is where you would have ended up with Oracle and SAP, and of course, those things are relevant very much in public sector and very large organizations where they're really wedded to those systems. I think the mid-market is very much an always-on sort of approach to change. So, you know, don't ever get to a point where you actually have a big need for some huge change project. It's a bit like keeping your garden trimmed the whole time. Systems change in and out as people sort of realize, okay, we're planning this year. This is what we're doing. Do we have the right people in place? Yes, no. Do we have the right systems in place? Yes, no. And I think it's very much on an annual basis, people are checking in and deciding if they have all the right systems. And with cloud and with the APIs being at the forefront of good cloud technology, it's an awful lot easier to swap systems in and out.
Yeah.
So it's, I think the world of people's decision making and thinking is much more, there's so much more volatility and change in the world. I think people's mindset is much more about adaptability and making sure that the user is actually happy with the technology, that it's not a hindrance, it's actually helping their job.
Yeah, indeed. So I'm that CFO that's got to the end of being able to use Xero successfully. I'm going in to start thinking about, you know, what decision do I need to make here? I need a new system, but what are the criteria I should be considering? I've probably heard a lot about some of the bigger middle market solutions like NetSuite, like Microsoft Dynamics. Now, what are the factors that would draw me as a CFO towards you rather than one of those other players?
Yeah, big brands, there can be safety of sorts in going with a big brand. I think that the implementation and the service, I mean, let's just say functionality-wise, NetSuite, Intacct, and Accounts IQ as an example, all stacked up. I think that what I would encourage any CFO and finance team to consider is the fit for purpose for what you're really looking for. Like, are you going to be paying an awful lot more money for functionality that is modules in particular that might be in a NetSuite or an Intacct that you're, do you need them firstly? And secondly, if you do need them, are they actually going to do the job for you? Or are you actually better off getting, because often what ends up happening is that people would actually need to go and they might find it's not fit for purpose and they need to go and actually procure another third-party system and integrate it. So I think making sure that you really know what problems you're trying to solve in your business is really important. And I think service is critical. I think time as well. Often you don't want to get involved in a project that can become quite risky if there's a significant amount of configuration required and a huge timeline to deliver a project that could take sometimes as long as 12, if not 18, 24 months sometimes. So making sure that your service provider is going to be able to deliver the project to a satisfactory level of success, I think is really important.
So interesting. Watch out for what you're getting from the price point that the vendor's offering. Do you need all those things that are pushing the price point higher?
Yeah, including the cost to serve it as well. So often you might find if things can be harder to run, that you actually need more expertise to run them. So there can be hidden costs associated with a bigger system. And bigger systems have their place. I think in the mid-market, it's more a question of, do you need to go to that next level? And actually, is it going to slow you down rather than keep you agile? So it's almost like you're sort of taking far too big a step that is just not necessary. And as a result, the user's experience mightn't be as good. The learning curve might be steeper. It's much more expensive to run. And you're not necessarily really getting all that you expect. And actually, there can be a significant risk in projects that are bigger, of course, by their nature.
Yeah. So what would an implementation project look like if I was putting in Accounts IQ? What's a typical implementation look like?
Yeah, so we have a pre-sales team, which is we've learned over the years, it's an incredibly important part of guaranteeing success. We've got an exceptionally high CSAT score on our onboarding, and that really comes from the knowledge of our sales team. Firstly, the people we look to engage with in the first place. So, and then secondly, the sales team it's very consultative, really trying to understand what problems someone's trying to solve. And then the pre-sales team do a further check to make sure they validate the fit of the problems versus the solutions that we offer. So what's really nice about that process is that the people are landing in the onboarding experience, which is incredibly interactive, both with simple technology as well as a dedicated project manager and support team. So we take the whole customer life cycle as one uninterrupted experience. When someone arrives into they have a lovely customer experience around the greeting that they will get, be assigned a project manager. You can in fact even click in our product. We actually have the project plan. No one else offers that in the market. So you actually click a product when you're in the onboarding stage. You can actually visualize a Gantt of your project and all the tasks are assigned to various different people between the AIQ and the customer's team. So that really speeds up the calendar time. We find that a lot of elapsed time in project is because the assignment of tasks and the follow-up for that actually is just done through email and things like that, and it actually can just be quite slow. So the most interesting phase is the design phase, which is incredibly quick. If a client wants it to go quickly, it's effectively just the discovery of effectively what are the inputs and outputs that are required and the designing of the accounting structure and the different dimensions. And that's a lovely, refreshing experience for a customer to kind of know they're going to be entering this lovely new world where they're going to get a lot of different reporting capability. And then there's the different types of workflows then that would naturally need to be tested in a sandbox environment. So all of the effectively those old ideas of parallel running and systems is just not needed anymore. Effectively everything, all of the processes are run through a sandbox and all of the different user personas will get their chance to experience what it's like to input and also input with reports in a really safe environment. And then we have an academy, the AIQ Academy, which again is accessible through the product, which basically sends, it's fully CPD approved as well by different institutes as well. So it's professional points associated with it, but you're ultimately able to go on learning journeys then depending on what type of things that you do in the system. So there's a very rich learning curve. And we've got all sorts of different help that's also accessible through the product, including customer success, a dedicated agent and a support team. And then we also have product roadmap is built into the product, customer requests. So there's a very good digital experience. Our purpose statement is very much centered around giving the right service to the right user persona at the right time and doing that through a combination of digital experience and human experience. It's also very fast. So typically about 6 weeks is the onboarding time.
So, Site contract, 6 weeks later, you're using the system.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is quick.
Yeah, very fast. Yeah. Now, it can go slower if people, for some reason, have other projects on. It's up to them how quickly they want to run the project, actually. But that's the average. And we've had it go much faster. If you're a much bigger group with a lot of integrations to build, people might phase that a little bit more. Yeah, but we're extremely fast.
Yeah. So, you keep mentioning a lot better reporting coming out of the system. Mm. Now, the big growing areas in finance is the FP&A community.
Mm.
Are FP&A going to get what they want out of a system like this, or are they going to have a load of other tools as well?
It's a very topical question, Gavin, actually. I mean, FP&A is a huge area. I'd even heard a new acronym I hadn't heard until recently called XFP, which is Extendable Financial Planning, which is, it seems that collaboration is becoming an ever increasingly important part of financial planning, because often planning is done best where the knowledge is richest, and often the knowledge is spread out through owner organization. In a smaller business, the knowledge of financial planning can often be done successfully through one particular person because they would have access to understanding and knowing most things about financial planning. But when you get into the mid-market or higher, naturally that the business gets a little bit more complicated and the inputs are then spread throughout the organization. So is a role. And I guess what we would, our view of that world would be that we've got a lot of different technologies that integrate with our product to ultimately allow an FP&A persona or role to do their job with our product. And we have a revised budgeting capability to be published and consolidation as well across multi-entity. So you're getting effectively, as long as you have a place to perform your planning, we have the platform for that to be published into by entity level at different currencies and then consolidated. The actual planning modules themselves, our experience from research is that unless a business has an FP&A role, that they tend to use still Excel, that old trusted, amazing product, is still going strong. It's so incredibly flexible, and that actually most offices of the CFO are still going to be very reliant on Excel for a lot of their planning. So I don't know what your experience of it is, Kim.
Yeah, and that's interesting. We've got tech partners in Grow CFO who operate in the FP&A space. Say to them, who do you regard your biggest competitors?
And yeah.
Almost inevitably say our biggest competitor is the Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the adoption of a good FP&A tool is quite a comprehensive piece of software. Yeah. It's got a lot of different modules. So I think that the ability, it's not cheap either. It's got a steep learning curve. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think for a good FP&A tool, one that actually has planning capability, there's a lot of forecasting tools that are effectively are just taking information and revisualizing it more often. They might be taking a cash feed like your futures or your floats. They might be taking working capital information that's there and just having a nice visualization to show you what that looks like. But that's the planning bit. It's got to have capital modules. It's got to have HR people elements to it, and also different types of scenario planning. So there's a lot of different setup of those things. So I think from what I know, an FP&A tool really starts at possibly 20,000 euros or sterling and higher. So it's not a small investment. And then you also need a qualified accountant usually to run it, or someone who's trained in FP&A. So you're probably talking 100,000 of an investment to run FP&A in that sort of full way, which is a pretty significant investment for a business.
So what we're saying is great reporting, great potential for integration. You can bring in tools as you wish. What tools you want very much depends on your requirements as a business.
Very much, yeah.
Okay. Darren, I'm going to ask you to get your crystal ball out.
Okay.
We're hearing a lot about the impact of AI agents, finance, and how the finance world's going to change. What do you see happening specific to products like Accounts IQ? Where do you see the future in the next 2 or 3 years with what we're going to be seeing versus the traditional accounting solution?
It's a great question, Kevin, and I think it's starting to become a bit clearer. I don't think that anyone has the absolute exact answer, because businesses like us are basically implementing AI at the moment. We've got a really nice roadmap of AI that we'll be releasing very shortly. And I think that there's actually a number of different things to that. The first thing is that this whole basic agents, if you look at what software ultimately is doing, it's effectively providing an interface to a database. And in our case, it's a system of record. So it's a really important part of any business. Every single business needs to maintain, it's written into company law. And there's naturally lots of different compliance stakeholders, effectively the tax authorities, the company's house, and your funding stakeholders, as well as shareholders. So they all require that system of record to be there. So I think fundamentally, AI won't change that. There is a fundamental need to have those records there. And what software does is it provides, and over the years has provided, an increasingly better experience through screens. Okay, so ways to run workflows and allow a person to use, to read and write basically to that system of record. And then what happened was we had the API came around, which then allowed the automation of records to be sent automatically in, particularly where there's a degree of frequency, because it doesn't really make sense to automate data flows unless there's a degree of frequency. So once data volumes start to kick in, going in or out of that ultimate system record, we have the advent of AI, and in ecosystems everywhere, APIs are in use everywhere. So what I think AI will do, and it won't actually, this piece won't be overnight, because at the end of the day, people have roles and jobs to do that are quite unique to their world. And so many years of building out different systems and screens is actually how people are currently performing the jobs of the tasks that need to be done for those businesses. So those screens are going to stay there. However, over time, agents will ultimately automation, you'll be able to create effectively automation of those different tasks without the need for someone running the screen. I mean, the most basic, obvious example of that is if a month-end task is doing, in our case, for example, if you've got a group of 10 businesses and you might have a series of month-end closes to do, different reviews of VAT returns, there's a lot of mouse clicking that can be involved in a job, but you could have a series of automations that would be running that are effectively always going to run those jobs for you unless that particular person responsible chooses to interrupt those jobs or stop them or review them or change them. So I think one of the most simple things will be RPA, which is robotic process automation, which is in the AI sphere, and just basically allowing a user to perform, get those jobs running. They could have 10 jobs particular to their role that are just running automatically. So that's one thing. Another one is insights. So effectively, the information is all on the platform that's secure and unique to that particular business. There is lots of things that can be running around fraud, identifying anomalies, and those things can be running automatically in the background. And they might be tasks that ordinarily a finance team wouldn't actually have the resources or ability to run that easily. So I think there's a lot of add value things that aren't currently happening that can easily happen through AI in that way. And I guess there's also natural language processing whereby, you know, being able to query your unique data set in a secure way, the security is incredibly important. Being able to automate report writing are all things that are, the technology is there already for all of that. So I think the crystal ball is more so in how businesses like ourselves, software businesses, effectively use everything that's already on the shelf, because most of this is already there. Our platform is built on Microsoft Azure, and there is a whole range of AI tools in that environment and others. So it's really a question of, for us, it's the closeness to our customers and making sure that we're offering the right tools at the right time. And because you'll have different users will be looking to use AI quicker than others. So it's actually going to be very much a dual world for a very long time, whereby our job will be to introduce really nice tools that we feel are going to add value. At the same time, we're not going to create too steep a new learning curve whereby you're throwing everything out. So it's actually going to be quite interesting to have those two worlds working together, which is quite exciting, actually.
Yeah, I think that's a big conundrum at the moment that we've all got to solve. The finance team coming from maybe 18 months ago, hardly having heard of AI, to all of the things that are now on the shelf and are now possible. How on earth do you get that implementation of some of this new stuff going within your finance function? It's not a function necessarily of the capability of the systems and the tools you've got around you. It's much more a function of your own internal ability to change and take people on a journey.
True, very true. There is one fundamental, which is that AI will only needs a few things to operate. So it does need data. In machine learning, if you're prompting something to looking to get reasonably accurate reply, it does require a certain amount of data. It also does need to be cloud. So if you're a business that isn't on a system, a modern cloud system, then you're sort of at a disadvantage already because you're not going to have the technological environment that will AI is AI friendly or AI ready. So I think anyone who doesn't already have that, I think, should really consider making sure that you've got a cloud-based FMS system and other systems around your business, because those are the businesses that will be bringing AI innovation onto those platforms. And I think our job is very much, we've been in the measuring adoption business for an extremely long time now, whereby we do have a very good sense of how to introduce something new to people. I think our job is not to invent something that then we expect people to try and discover it and try to change how they work. It's very much introducing subtle, simple things that are making people curious to go, oh, that's interesting. I can see that there's something else that could help me here. And that it's very much a safe way for you to effectively play with a new way of doing something that allows you to still do the old way, but actually goes, oh, I just got my try that. That's really interesting. I like that. And then over time, you can like just switch things over to more automation, better insights using NLP versus using a sort of a structured querying reporting process. And there's going to be a need for both for an incredibly long time, because if you've got a business that has a compliance set of reports that need to be published, they're always going to need to be there for a very particular reason for those stakeholders. But if you're looking to find out something, then you might prefer a slightly more agile AI-based reporting tool that will just give you an answer much faster for a particular meeting that you're going to. So I think both positive and negative, or I guess optimistic or pessimistic statements I've heard around AI, is that AI isn't going to take your job, but the person who knows how to use AI might. So
Darren, we've covered a lot of ground in the last 45 minutes. We've talked about the pain points that you get as you go to that organization that's moved towards 50 people, why the accounting solutions that got you there, Xero, QuickBooks, and so on, might start not giving you what you want anymore. We've talked about what might be available from that set of mid-market lightweight ERPs. We've talked about what to look for and how to go about a selection process. We've talked about the implementation process as well. And we've had a quick peek through the crystal ball into the future. Darren, wow, thank you. Thank you very much for being this week's guest on the Grow CFO Show.
Thanks, Kev. Pleasure.